Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Sean Broderick. He is the natural resource analyst over at Weiss Ratings. Sean also writes on a wide range of topics, and that's where we're actually going to focus. I know it doesn't sound like a focus, but we're going to step outside of precious metals commentary and the precious metals stocks and look to some of the other commodities, other resources that we've even gotten some comments on recently, asking for a few more comments and analysis on some of these other sectors. Sean, you're the perfect guy for this. So we're going to start off with the rare earths sector. You've wrote about that recently. It sounds like you see some potential in at least some of these stocks and within some of the rare earths. Take us through, first and foremost, your macro outlook for the rare earth sector, please.
Sure. Well, the global rare earths industrial demand is expected to about a double over a seven-year time period. That's because we use rare earths in everything, and especially in cutting-edge technology. Now, China has kind of a lock on rare earths production because at one time it overproduced to drive other producers out of business. That's a strategy that worked quite well. But now the U.S. government realizing we can't have China have that control over our rare earths. They've already used rare earths as a weapon once against Japan, and so we don't want to be the next people to actually suffer that fate. So the U.S. introduced two critical metals acts. One is the Onshoring Rare Earths Act of 2020, and then there's the American Critical Minerals Exploration and Innovations Act, and I'm just out of breath saying those two things, but what they will do is they are going to support rare earth mining and especially rare earth processing here in North America. Doesn't have to be in the U.S., can be in Canada, but they would like it to be in the U.S. And then there's the National Defense Authorization Act, which is yet another thing. The U.S. government is really getting interested in promoting rare earth production and processing in friendly places, non-China places. And that's the kind of opportunity that most investors should probably take a look at and say, how can this work out for me? I mean, there's a real opportunity if the government starts throwing money at different corporations, which is exactly what it's already starting to do. So I think that's something that should definitely be on your radar.
Sean, in the rare earth space, I was pretty active in it in the last cycle from 2010 to 2012, and there were some interesting projects found and located, and a lot of work was done. And then rare earths went through some tough times, and initially there was all those concerns about China, you know, having a lockdown on the pricing, which they still do, but then they were forced to, you know, still meet everybody's trade quotas because it's such a there's so many strategic metals and so many important metals that are part of everything from lasers to magnets and giant windmills to technology, you name it. And a large part of the, you know, the electric vehicle movement, even all the gadgets we use have rare earths in them. But when people look at the companies, it's a little daunting to know where to go. There's some companies that are downstream processors. There's some that are the mining companies on the front end. And then there's also some companies working on processing and, you know, and taking old tailings and putting those into rare earths. What area are you liking as an investment angle in the rare earth space?
Well, actually, you bring up a great point, which is that it's hard for the average investor to actually look at these stocks and value them in a realistic way, let's say that. And at the same time, some of the better producers are hard to buy because they're primarily listed in Australia or, you know, Chile, something like that. So the easiest way for the average investor is to buy the Van Eck Vectors Rare Earth Strategic Metals ETF. Symbol is REMX. And so that just gives you exposure to a whole bunch of rare earth producers and processors. Beyond that, if you want to buy individual stocks, because of course they have more potential upside as well as higher risk, just see what the REMX owns, right? And go through and see what you can buy and what you are comfortable buying and like stuff like that, because that's a fund that Wall Street's going to turn to as well. Those stocks that are in that fund are probably going to get a whole bunch of money from investors who don't really know much about them. So they're likely to rise anyway. Beyond that, you have to do a lot of research, you know, and things change. I mean, one thing that might look like a great prospect one week has some bad drill holes and then doesn't turn out so well the next. Or else another thing is it runs into local interference. We're seeing that a lot, actually. So that means those that can produce become even more valuable because they don't have local people, local tribes saying not in our backyard. So I would start with the REMX and then move on from there. That's a good starting point for pretty much anybody.
So, Sean, just another quick comment regarding catalysts, not just to the upside. Anything that you think could or that you have your eyes on that could push the rarer sector lower? So, in a sense, maybe timing-wise for investors.
If China feels threatened by a bunch of new producers, they will probably outproduce them at a loss. That's what they did last time, right? That's the big risk in the sector. It always is. The other thing is a global financial collapse, which would drive demand, but I think that would be a bigger risk and concern for many other reasons.
Fair enough. Okay, let's move over to lithium now, because lithium is another sector that really ebbs and flows in terms of the interest in the sector, driven a lot by battery demand or this whole electrification narrative. That's at least what puts lithium on a lot of investors' radars. What's your outlook for the lithium sector?
Yeah, well, globally last year, EV sales hit 3.2 million. And while while that's a big jump for them, that's actually just a tiny, tiny slice of the automobiles that rolled off the world's assembly lines last year. And so we are seeing big growth in that market. It's still very, very small. So what this means is, I mean, hopefully there's a lot of upside potential. But that's only one thing that lithium and the other battery metals are used in. There's also battery storage. If we're having more wind and more solar around the world, you know, we need to store that energy for when the wind isn't blowing, when the sun isn't shining. And so that is another thing that's just going to see tremendous lithium demand. Now, the next 2 years, this is according to a few Wall Street analysts, the next 2 years anyway should see a really tight lithium supply. We've already seen prices move up, and there's different kinds of lithium, yeah. But basically, the prices are moving higher, and we should see support for prices over the next 2 years anyway. So that will keep things elevated. So there's real opportunity here. I mean, after that, we might see more production. Then again, we might see more demand, too. After 2 years, it's really hard for anybody to make any serious predictions, right? There's lots of good opportunities there. Some stocks are overpriced, absolutely. When you look at what they're expected to actually produce in the next 3 to 5 years, you're there. You know what? I'd rather buy that after there's a big correction. Then again, there's a few places you can stick your toe in the water and, just bite the bullet, because this is a mega trend. This is actually happening. And so, yeah, I would definitely want exposure to the lithium space.
Well, Sean, just along the lines of the lithium space, kind of a similar question to rare earths. And that is that there's a couple different ways to play it. There are some companies that are producing lithium that's more used in the medical grade or used in ceramics and in fabrication. And there's some that are making battery grade specific lithium. So there are a couple different tiers of it, but there's a lot of companies that have gone from the long path of the explorer to developer and producers. And there's actually about 10 producing companies now, but there's also a lot of companies still exploring for lithium, and there's the hard rock side of it. And then there's the brine side of it. So some right. investors get confused as to, you know, what are you more interested in? There's some pros and cons to both models, but then there's also some of the downstream processors that process the lithium and make the batteries. And there's the battery component. What area has you most animated, and what are you looking for when you're getting positioned in the lithium space?
Well, I'm looking at a couple things. Cost of production. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, whether it's hard rock, whether it's brine. You know, how cheaply can you actually produce high quality lithium? Because the higher the purity, that's where the real pricing power comes into it. The other thing is, how much can you raise production? And a third and very important thing is what's the geopolitical situation where you're either mining or else planning to mine? I had an article recently talking about the not in my backyard thing we're seeing all across North America to different lithium projects. And like, you know, these are great projects. They should definitely be approved. And yet there's a lot of local opposition to just from people that don't want a lithium mine in their backyard, or else it's tribes saying, you know, you're going to build this mine where we hunt and fish, which, you know, I mean, I can understand their objection. On the other hand, they'd also be the ones probably working at the mine, so that might help. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, so it's not just one thing. And one thing you left out is we're also seeing the potential for lithium production coming from reprocessing of like old batteries and like stuff like that. That's a newer technology, and like some people say that they're working out the kinks and like stuff like that, but keep your eye on that too, because that's one more thing that could happen. So again, even though, you know, it seems like an industry and a process which seems pretty well set, it's changing all the time. There's new stuff coming down the road. They're talking about new batteries that will use either more or less lithium depending on which solution they go with. So a lot of this is up in the air. What I tend to look at is those companies that either are producing now or have a good plan to produce in the next year or 2 years. Ones that are further out than that, you know what, the market can change a lot. And yeah, you can buy them for pennies, but what will they be worth when they actually get closer to production? So that's the kind of thing that I'm looking at, either existing producers or near-term producers. You also want to look at processors, those that actually turn them into batteries, because some of those companies are locking up great contracts and have some real opportunities there as well.
Sean, just one more follow-up on this lithium discussion, because it's been a while since we've chatted on it, and there are some new developments. There's now another push, and there has been for some time, to also extract lithium from oil and gas brine wells. And then there's also a new movement in California where they're looking at, you know, using some of the geothermal areas to extract it from some of the salty brine seas left behind. And there's a lot of automotive companies investing heavily in that. And you're talking millions, and in some cases, billions of dollars they're investing into infrastructure to try to source their battery components. Are you looking at any of these angles to play the space?
Yes, I am. And again, that's why I want ones that have nearer term production. While I'm watching those companies you're speaking about, I'm not investing in them right now. For one thing, they're going to have to raise a lot more money. And yes, they have deep pocketed friends in the car companies that are, but those car companies aren't saying we are going to actually depend on it. What they're saying is it would be really nice if this worked out, because then we'd have a great source, you know, that's close to home, that we don't have to bribe people down in Chile to get at and stuff like that. So there's a lot of that too. They don't need it to work out. They'd like it to work out. Any investment I think you make in those small companies should be done with the, thought in mind that it might not work out, right? I mean, any of this cutting edge technology, they have to make it economically viable. It can't just work in a lab. It has to work on large scale industrial processing. So yeah, definitely watch those stocks, watch that space. There's some real potential there. But if I'm investing, I want something nearer term, because in lithium especially, really it's only the nearer term that has any clarity on what the demand supply situation is going to be.
All right. Well, Sean, on to another sector, one that we've talked about a number of times before, and that's energy stocks. So oil and gas. I'll start with oil here because, look, crude has been in a bit of a correction. About 4 weeks ago, crude reached almost $77 a barrel. Now it's down to low 70s, but it did drop the whole way down to $65 a barrel. Do you think there's something bigger going on here with the energy sector that's telling us a bit more about how investors are positioning, or is this a buying opportunity here?
Well, my view is that we are going to see a big uptrend, but COVID's really scaring the bejesus out of everybody. And so people are worried about the same kind of lockdowns we had last year. For me, it's more psychological. I don't think we're going to have the kind of lockdowns we had last year, because they didn't really work the way that people were hoping. And they're a real economic hardship. But the market has to work through this psychological mindset where they can see things like the Delta variant of COVID, which is 60% more transmissible than the original free-range of COVID-19. So they see a lot of this, and they're just really worried about it. What I've done is I took some profits, actually took a couple losses because things were not working out in those stocks, and I put in some hedge positions. But that's just short term. Longer term, I'm very bullish on the price of oil and all sorts of things, and I think things will work out very well. But, I mean, oil had an amazing run anyway. A lot of those stocks got a little lofty for, like, where they were. So I'll be buying them probably sooner rather than later, but they might have some more downside here.
Okay, so you're using oil as maybe a barometer, too, to show the fear that could creep into investors' eyes. Any specific oil stocks or sectors within the oil stocks that you like, that you think have the best maybe upside or that have underperformed this rally in oil?
Well, I mean, I'd rather mention the ones I'm going to buy. One thing I can say is look at the oil services stocks. They were beaten down badly. And so they're ones that have tremendous upside when the market works through its fears of COVID. They really do. So I would say look at the oil services stocks, and I'll just leave it right there.
Well, hey, Sean, just as a follow-up on that thought, if investors are interested in the oil and gas space and they want exposure to the oil services you just mentioned, there is the ETF OIH. And then for people that want to play the larger producers, there's the ETF XLE. And for the smaller producers, developers, and explorers, there's also the ETF XOP. So those are three ETFs that investors can use in the oil and gas space. And if they want individual names, as you suggested in the rare earths, they can just deconstruct those ETFs and look at the holdings. And those are the ones the institutions and larger investors are positioned in. So another sector, though, that we should definitely get your thoughts on, Sean, is the cannabis sector. There's been a pretty big pullback in the sector since the beginning of the year. A lot of investors are wondering, is this the time to get involved? Is this a good time to bottom fish? And we've also seen some big transactions like the Tilray-Aphria merger. So there's a little bit of activity in the space. What are your thoughts, Sean? Is this a good time to get positioned?
Yeah, well, I actually thought cannabis stocks were going to bottom earlier than this because of when they bottomed last year, which was mid-July. And instead, we've seen them continue to sell off. One thing I think people should keep in mind is that August is earning months for U.S. cannabis stocks. You're going to see most of the earnings come out. Certainly, most of the interesting plays report earnings next month. We just saw Tilray report its earnings, and as you said, it merged with Aphria. And I didn't find the earnings report that impressive, frankly. You know, they're still finding ways to burn money, but the market was cheered up enough by that to send the stock 20% higher at the open. So that tells you that there's an appetite for these stocks. People just want to see some kind of, light at the end of the tunnel. I think that's coming with the earnings reports, especially for U.S. stocks, coming out next month. We are going to see some really good news. I mean, just looking at what these companies are reporting so far. And so there's some real upside potential there. I remain long U.S. cannabis stocks. I remain adding to them one slice at a time. I'm not buying the whole hog at once, just slicing in, getting into these positions, because when they blast off, they are probably going to move fast. Cannabis stocks usually do. When they move as a group, they really take off. And so if you're looking for value, definitely look at the cannabis industry.
Sean, final comment before we wrap it up here is, look, we are in the middle of summer. Summer trading, where volumes are low, moves generally are muted, and some sectors, no matter what kind of news comes out, seem to just drift lower during this time period. Everyone kind of forgot what summer trading was like last year because we were all stuck at home and everybody was actually actively trading. How aggressive are you right now during this slow season? And what is your strategy for when you start to see volumes pick up?
Yeah, well, as the old saying goes, never short a dull market, right? So I have added a couple hedge positions, but that's just because, the market seems lofty. earnings are coming out that are actually quite good for some companies, and they're still being sold. What that tells us is that too much anticipation was built into the earnings, or else maybe people are seeing the good earnings they expected and then looking forward and say, yeah, there's no way they'll be able to improve on that. And so maybe that's why they're selling. For whatever reason, the great earnings we're seeing do not seem to be moving the market to the upside, which means the path to the downside becomes more of a possibility. I'm not tremendously bearish. A deeper correction would not surprise me. People should be aware of that. I'd only buy stocks you think can go higher anyway. There's something going on with them where you think they look really good. Aluminum stocks people should be looking at. The numbers coming out of there are tremendous. They're really, really good. The prices are stronger. We took gains on our aluminum stocks back in May. I'm probably going to buy again because they look really good. Cybersecurity stocks, they've actually been pulling back recently, and that makes no sense at all when you consider what's going on with every piece of news on the cyber industry and what's going on with hacking and stuff. Those stocks are going to have a tremendous year. Just going to be fantastic. I'd definitely be looking in that space. Lithium, rare earth, use these pullbacks as opportunities to at least take a slice. Again, especially in a market like this, and you did mention that, yeah, we have the summer doldrums here, it's dull. So while you should never short a dull market, at the same time, you shouldn't be taking huge bites either, because when you have low volume, things can move around to the upside or the downside for reasons that don't seem to make a lot of sense in the moment, but part of it is the low volume. So I think people should just be careful about what they buy, only buy things they really want to own. But they should look for opportunities because they are there. I think you could do very well, all things considered.
All right, Sean, great chatting with you. As always, buddy, I know we talked about a number of different sectors here, but that's because you write on all these sectors. And again, we've been getting comments asking for more commentary, and you're the perfect guy to give it to us. So, hey, if anybody wants us to focus on any other sectors with Sean Broderick, please just email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. Put Sean's name in the subject line so we can forward that over to him, and we'll discuss it next time we have them on.
I would just like to add one thing, which is I'm going to be speaking at the Las Vegas Money Show next month. And so I'll be speaking on cannabis. If you want to hear from me live exactly what is going on in the cannabis market in probably one of the best cities to talk about it, come to Las Vegas for the Money Show in September. It's going to be a great show.
There you go. If you want any more information, again, you can just email us and we will put you in touch with Sean. Sean, thanks again for your time, buddy.
Thank you.